Do you find you often put off having those difficult conversations in your relationships? Maybe you always put them off and never have them, and ultimately know that if you could have those communications or conversations with your partner, you could develop a much better relationship with them. But it's so challenging. Today, we're going to talk about experiential avoidance, what it is, and how you can change your experience of this to develop better relationships. If you'd like to find out more about how you can improve your relationships or how to find and create a great relationship, head over to therelationshipmaze.com, where we have different resources and our online course, The Relationship Maze, where you can learn how to develop a wonderful and fulfilling relationship. And you can also take our online conflict style quiz to discover your conflict style in relationships and how you can change it. And press subscribe right now. Welcome to today's podcast, and today we're going to talk about experiential avoidance. So essentially those things that we tend to put off because they're really challenging to do, like those difficult conversations with our partner, or something we really want to do, like maybe a place we want to go on holiday. However, we're concerned about the response we're going to get if we bring this up. So we end up never bringing this up. And essentially we always feel that somehow we're not as fulfilled as we could be. And a lot of it is because we avoid taking action on those things that would bring up challenging emotions for us.
So when you're talking about experiential avoidance, I suppose you're ultimately talking about an underlying fear. Yeah, avoidance is always driven by fear, generally. And the fear might be that if you bring up a topic that is challenging that your partner might not agree with, the underlying fear might be that they're not going to like it, and therefore they're not going to like me, right?
Yeah, so I think fear is one emotion as an example of things that we tend to avoid. Mm. It's also really any emotion that we feel uncomfortable with,
okay,
which would often label as negative emotions. Mm. So it could be those emotions that, you know, for somebody else, it could be something to do with sadness. So talking about something that they feel sad about, or okay, or going into a situation where they might feel sad. Uh-huh. So they avoid doing that. So any sort of emotion that essentially we're used to finding as a difficult emotion, mm-hmm, we may go out of our way to avoid. And I think, like you said, fear or anxiety is one of the very common ones. Mm-hmm. And how many times do we tend to avoid things because we're worried about it? It might be that, you know, it could be in social situations that you're worried about what people might think of you. So you tend to avoid certain situations like going to a party or maybe going for certain job interviews because you're anxious about getting rejected. Mm. So rather than face that possible rejection, you avoid even applying for the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but back to that, to the point that I made, you avoid it because you're worried. There's an underlying anxiety, right? Always.
Well, not always. But I mean, I think we avoid certain, uh-huh, things because they might feel uncomfortable.
Right.
But like you said, sort of anxiety and worry is a very common
you're
one.
Right. You're right. There are also situations that might feel very uncomfortable. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So because I'm interested immediately in, you know, why? Why would you do that? Why would you not? Why would you try to avoid challenging situations?
Well, I mean, I think it makes perfect sense at some level, okay, even though it doesn't make sense when you think in the big picture. Mm-hmm. But in the short term, avoiding that pain seems like the most sensible thing to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, essentially, the way we've evolved with our fight-flight response, freeze response. Fawn response. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you know, with those sort of reactions, the natural thing is when our brain kicks into gear, we have this response where we tend to think, well, maybe avoiding is the best situation. Mm-hmm. You know, avoid might be safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So let's think about some situations where this is relevant. If we think about relationships,
yeah,
I suppose a very obvious example is that you avoid having experiences with your partner which you might experience as threatening to the relationship. So, for example, conflictual experiences, anything that is perceived as conflict. And that's a very typical presentation, isn't it, in lots of couple relationships, that one or both partners don't talk about something that they think might be a hot topic, that they might actually annoy the other partner, upset the other partner, or somehow pose some sort of risk to the relationship. So rather than talking about it, it goes underground. Either it's not talked about, it's repressed, or very often it comes out in passive-aggressive little snippy remarks. Yeah, that's one way where it might leak out then.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of common topics, so this might be the case. Like, for example, it could be to do with even having, you know, having children, if you think your partner doesn't want to have children. Mm. It could be money topics. It could be topics around sex. Mm. You know, there are many different topics that some people would feel difficult or find it very challenging to bring up because it feels uncomfortable to talk about. Mm. The reality is it might not be uncomfortable for your partner, but because of your own past history and what you've learned when you were younger, it feels very uncomfortable to talk about. Mm. And the challenge is, although avoiding it in the short term, in a way it feels a little bit more comfortable temporarily, it means that you're never going to have the quality of relationship or the things that would really make a difference in your life. So it's short-term, you know, essentially short-term gain leads to long-term pain.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, I think it's almost like a form of lying, isn't it? If you always say, oh, if you're doing something that actually you don't really want to do, but you say, I'm happy to do that, then you're effectively lying, aren't you?
Well, we could say that, but I'm not sure. If you do that, I don't know if it's necessarily helpful to think of that, because then on top of feeling bad about not doing it, you then feel guilty about lying. I think it's sort of, I think what's really important is to have compassion for yourself and realize you avoid this because it does feel difficult, because it feels awkward.
Of course, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it's driven by a particular reason. You're not necessarily doing it consciously, but you're doing it in order to either protect yourself or protect your partner or protect the relationship. It's driven by that, usually. But it's not, but it's very, as you say, it's very short-sighted as a way of interacting with your partner, isn't it? Because, and also, it's, well, lying is too strong a term, but in a way it is a kind of, it's a pretense, maybe. Sometimes that you're pretending to go along, you're pretending to go to be happy to go along with something when you're actually not, or you're pretending to be satisfied with certain aspects of your relationship when you're not, and you're always withholding something from your partner, then a certain truth. Yeah.
Well, we could look at that as truths. Like I said, as well, it depends on what that brings up for you.
Sure.
Because I think, you know, there are good reasons very frequently, and sometimes it feels really so difficult that we don't bring it up. Mm. But it's not just in interactions with your partner. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be that, you know, there are things you want to bring up in your relationship, but there are also things you want to do yourself that you put off because you don't feel that you would be able to do them as well. Mm-hmm. So it might be a hobby. Mm. And it might be, for example, you want to learn pottery, but you think, I'd never be any good at it, or I have to kind of be judged by people. Mm. And this actually could be something that could improve your relationship, because as in other podcasts, we've talked about how, you know, essentially it's also important to have independence and separation as well as togetherness. Mm. And having hobbies and interests can be really important as part of your relationship. Mm. But many people put off doing these things for themselves because of that fear of being judged, or the fear of failure, or the fear of doing something new. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even these aspects, which I wouldn't call lying, I mean, you could say it's lying to yourself, but I personally would just say this is a strategy which is normal. Mm-hmm. And it's recognizing that, you know, the tendency to think, if something feels uncomfortable, I'll avoid it, seems quite natural. Mm-hmm. But it only works in the short term. Because when you think about what's really important to you in your life, what's really important to you and your relationships, we think in a much longer term, in a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And although these short-term gains may avoid some of that discomfort temporarily, it means you're never going to get what really kind of gives you that fulfillment or what you want out of your life or relationship.
Yeah, it's sort of slightly short-changing yourself, isn't it? Because another, I think, classic example is also staying in a job that is very dissatisfying to you, that you really don't like at all, But not daring to change, not daring to take the risk to maybe look for a different job because you ultimately are familiar with the situation that you're in, and you don't want to expose yourself to something that is new. So very often this idea of emotional avoidance is also driven by a desire to avoid anything which means uncertainty in your life, because uncertainty is associated with anxiety. So where's this coming from anyway? Let's just sort of look a little bit at these the root causes here. Why might somebody be so avoidant of any kind of experiences that they experience as negative?
Well, I mean, we can see this in many different ways. Like I said, there is the evolutionary sort of fight, flight, freeze response, where basically, you know, we have a sudden reaction and you have that tendency to just respond, maybe with, you know, with a flight response. That's going to be a good example of avoidance. Mm-hmm. But I think more dominantly is the cultural ways that we're taught that negative, or what we might label as negative emotions, are not okay, that we shouldn't feel them, that we need to try and get rid of them. You know, right from those messages from when we're younger, like, for example, be strong, or, you know, with regards to, and I think there may be sort of different gender stereotypes, like, you know, certainly when I was younger, there were lots of messages around sort of boys don't cry. I'm not sure what it was like.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, not expressing feelings, or, you know, and you know, even in those situations where there might be very difficult, challenging things that happen when you're younger. Like, you know, for example, I remember when I was about six, I think my grandmother died. And my parents, you know, wouldn't talk about the emotions at all with it. They were trying to avoid discussing that, even though I felt very upset. Because, you know, they wanted to avoid dealing with these very difficult things. So you kind of learn unconsciously that there's something not okay about feeling sad. There's something not okay about feeling anxious. There's something not okay about feeling angry. Whereas these are actually normal emotions. But we tend to, we learn throughout our development that, you know, some of these things we need to control. They're not okay to show in society, or they're not okay to have yourself.
Yeah, and I think I'm mindful of, I can think of clients I work with who either had, when they were growing up in their family of origin, they had experiences where there was a high level of emotional expression. For example, a family where there was a lot of, a loud family where there were lots of disagreements openly, lots of conflict, etc. So the client really struggled with that when they were growing up in this environment, and therefore kind of learned or always yearned for an environment where there was less emotional expression. So they might then also, taking that forward, do everything in their future relationships or in their current relationships to kind of regulate down, to down-regulate emotions, to not have an overexpression, to kind of keep it as harmonious as possible, so to speak. That's one example. The other example is a client who's worked, who's grown up in an environment where there was very little emotional expression in the family, where the parents were always kind of like pretty much at the same level. So, you know, they were not up, they were not down, there wasn't anger, there wasn't sadness, there wasn't much joy that was expressed. It was always kind of the same level. So very often, these are also clients who then in their adult life might struggle a little bit more with expressing emotions because they haven't learned it. They haven't, it hasn't been modeled by the parents. So I think there's also an influence, of course, as always, from your childhood experiences in terms of what you consider to be safe now as an adult in terms of emotional expression.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you described about sort of, for example, parents are always in conflict, well, that's where it's generalized that, you know, one emotional expression is bad, so we need to keep all of them to a minimum, where essentially that's a generalized rule. Again, it's another example of it's not okay to show emotions, or it could be dangerous to show emotions. So it's these internalized rules. And I think one of the things is that appreciation that all emotions are valid. But we have emotions, and it's not that we have to let the emotion rule us. And that's the subtle difference, is you have emotions, but you're not your emotions. So throughout an average week, you probably experience dozens of different emotions. None of them stay constant. They're moving in and out of them. And it's the appreciation as emotions will shift. Mm-hmm. Certain things may trigger us into emotional ways of being. We may react to things. Mm-hmm. And then it's noticing when you have an immediate reaction, you have choice about how you respond. Mm-hmm. So something might make you, for example, anxious. Mm. And that may be something that you learned when you were younger. Maybe you were told off for doing something when you were younger, like speaking out in class. Mm. And the teacher shouted at you and yelled at you because you spoke out of turn. Mm. And as a result, now you find it really difficult to bring up a topic, for example, at work. Mm. Or maybe raising a difficult issue with your partner. And immediately think of that, you get this anxiety, which probably goes back to a time like that. Mm. And it's noticing that immediate reaction, but rather than let that reaction take over and control what you then do, it's acknowledging, okay, you're having this reaction, you're having this experience of anxiety, you're having the thoughts that may go to this, like people may laugh at me. Mm. But rather than letting those thoughts and feelings control you, it's then choosing how you respond as a result. And it's not easy, but it's something that when you learn to do that, you're able to take more control over the long-term direction of your life.
Mm-hmm. I find actually that a lot of the time, the avoidance is driven by a feeling that you have, a sensation that you have. But a lot of the time, you might not even be aware of what it is that you're experiencing. There might be a sense of discomfort. That's something that you might notice. But you might not necessarily know what is it that I am experiencing. That's quite difficult, isn't it? Because we're not actually... we all have different... Again, we're socialized in different ways in terms of tapping into our inner world and having some sense of what is it that I'm experiencing. Again, if we had parents who taught us very well, who are very good at reflecting our internal experiences, then we might have a good vocabulary around that. But if that didn't happen, if we weren't mirrored or validated by our parents in that way, we might not even know. We might feel quite numb sometimes in terms of emotional experiences. So I think something, if we don't know what it is that we're feeling, then we also don't know what it is that we need to react to. So that's often the first step, identifying what the feeling is. And one way of doing that is to remember that feelings are embodied, they sit in our body, and that we're tuning in a little bit more into what is it that I'm feeling on a physiological level in my body right now. Where am I feeling it? Is it hot? Is it cold? Is it heavy? Is it light? What does it feel like? That might be one way of accessing your feeling states a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So beginning to notice when you have a response, or when you're thinking about, for example, bringing up a difficult topic with your partner, what goes on internally? Mm. So like you said, what's the feeling? Where do you feel it in your body? Mm. And if you tend to respond, well, it's my head, you may not be noticing the actual reaction you're having, because we have a physical response to things. Feelings have sensations. So it's like there's a matrix of sensations in our body that make up that feeling. Mm-hmm. So it's noticing, okay, I'm having this feeling maybe in my chest, I'm having a feeling in my stomach, beginning to notice what that feeling is like. Like you said, you could put a weight to it, or warmth, or, you know, some people even imagine it has a color, just a way of describing it.
Give it a voice, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can kind of get a sense of this, and getting in touch with that is really important, because until you're in touch with and noticing what the sensation is, essentially it's really taking over. Mm-hmm. But when you start to notice, yeah, I'm having this feeling here, I'm having a feeling in my stomach, it's like you begin to be able to notice that you have feelings, but you're not the feeling. The feeling doesn't need to run you. Mm-hmm. And also, what are the thoughts that you have? Mm-hmm. So what are the thoughts that come with that? Mm-hmm. Like, well, if I do this, then, you know, then my partner might not love me. Mm. And noticing, you know, this thought that comes up, you know, this is the thought that you've maybe carried with you from other experiences in your life. Mm. It doesn't necessarily reflect the situation now, but it's something that you learned at some point. Mm. And remembering that you have thoughts, but every day you have thousands of thoughts. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, right now, even if you've just woken up an hour ago, you've probably had a few hundred thoughts. Mm-hmm. Most of them you don't even remember. but there are certain thoughts that tend to hook you in. Mm. And those are the thoughts that we've learned from past experience that maybe that, you know, maybe these are more challenging. Maybe they're kind of, you know, maybe we've had some sort of negative associations with those thoughts. Mm. And we think at some level, maybe they protect us when they don't. But it's noticing you have this thought and often adding a word like, okay, I'm having the thought that this, that I'm going to be judged. Mm. But remembering that this is just a thought and trying to see the world as it is rather than as your mind tells you it is. Mm. So we tend to, you know, a lot of the time we see the world through these thoughts as if they're like a filter around us, like you're wearing an invisible bubble, like a colored bubble, like a pink bubble. Mm. And when you're wearing this bubble, everything seems pink because you're looking through this filter of this pink bubble. Mm. You don't even know you've got this bubble on you. But when you take this bubble off, you start to see the world is very different. And that it's because you're seeing it through this bubble, you saw it in that way. Mm. In the same way, if I think people would judge me, this is a thought. When you are aware that it's a thought, but it's not actually the way that will tend to happen or what will actually happen in the outside world, it can begin to help you free up and get some distance from those internalized thoughts.
Mm. Another thought that is just popping into my head right now is also that I'm kind of moving on a little bit from what you just described, which is really important, is also how important this is in relationships that you don't go into this avoidance with your partner. Because if you can open up, if you can have these experiences, if you can notice that there might be an anxious thought attached to expressing what you are feeling, experiencing in this moment, if you can overcome that, if you can let your partner in a little bit more in terms of sharing what your own internal experiences are, you're creating more connection and connectivity with your partner. You're creating more intimacy by letting them in. That doesn't mean that your partner has to do anything. If you are having a particular feeling or a particular thought, you can share this with your partner. That doesn't mean that your partner has to do anything about it. They don't have to change it. They don't have to do anything in response to it. They can just hear it, and that's it. I always teach couples to not feel that they always have to be reactive to everything that their partner brings. But if you are bringing this into the relationship, if you can take a few more risks there away from avoidance, ultimately you are creating a more intimate relationship where there's a bit more of an exchange, really, at a deeper level between you and your partner. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And really, the way to get through this and to kind of do this is in therapy, where to use this often with exposure. Mm-hmm. So exposure is where you have a willingness to be in challenging situations, like have the conversation with your partner, even though there may be a feeling of anxiety, even though there may be a feeling of sadness, even though you may have thoughts in your mind that say that this could be awful if my partner responds in the wrong way. Mm. But through exposure, it's that willingness that you're willing to be in the situation, you're willing to have that conversation, remembering that long-term outcome, remembering that this will bring closeness, this will bring a more fulfilling relationship in the long term, and being willing to engage with this, even though you have these short-term or immediate responses in terms of the sensations, the feelings in your body, the thoughts, having that willingness to be in that situation and to go through this situation and experience will help it become much more easier in the future.
Yeah, so it's kind of keeping that bigger picture in mind, isn't it? Or looking at the bigger picture, not just at that one situation, which kind of keeps you hostage, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we don't have to confront all of the feelings we don't like for no reason. It's just if it doesn't serve us, and we think, you know, is my avoiding this serving me in the long term? Mm. And a lot of the time, most of the time, it probably isn't. Mm. And it's in those things that the willingness to engage with these things, even though they feel challenging, allows you to create new possibilities for the future.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're making an important point. I think this is not an invitation to kind of share everything, every little thought and feeling that runs through you at any given point with your partner. That's not what we're talking about. But it's a particular stance, isn't it? It's a stance of maybe being a bit more open And also curious about each other. I mean, it's also the task for the partner to be curious, to be open to receiving what the other has got to bring, even if it's something that we might not want to hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
It works both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So takeaway from today's podcast is think about something that maybe you've been putting off mm-hmm. that you would serve you ultimately in the long term. Mm-hmm. And discover that willingness within yourself to be in that situation and to allow yourself maybe to have a conversation or to take up a hobby or do something that you've been putting off, even though there may be some of those feelings of anxiety, there may be different kind of sensations that are challenging in your body. You may have thoughts telling you otherwise, but allowing yourself to do that situation anyway and committing to that course of action will allow you to create more of a life that you want. Mm-hmm. So please press subscribe and head over to therelationshipmaze.com where you can find our online course, The Relationship Maze, to help you find and create and develop more fulfilling relationships. And we look forward to speaking with you next time.
Take good care until then. Bye.
Bye.